Your home for sports on the radio. We are 95.3 The Score. And now,
check this out.
It's crunch time with Steve Tannen.
They think he's a righteous dude.
When I win.
Live from the Papa John's studio.
Wait a minute. Let me get CB on the line. We're green lighting it. It's a call.
And I want full air support. I want tanks and some fire throwers. And I want explosions over here. And I want planes going. Cool.
Are they
going
to bust in here and arrest us?
It's crunch time on 95.3 The Score. And now, the Wednesday special edition of Crunch Time with Steve Tannen and USA Today's George Schroeder. Brought to you by Bi-Mart, just right for the Northwest. It's crunch time on 95.3 The Score.
Yeah. It's a Thursday. So we'll have George Schroeder in a couple minutes. He was in a familiar spot today on the front page of the sports section. They picked up his story from USA Today about Mullins' recusal becoming awkward. Basketball of the NBA and collegiate variety. The Oregon men are home tomorrow night against Houston. Good team from last year. They lost a lot of their firepower. They just won at Rice. Quentin Grimes, their current big gun, with 32 points on 11 of 17 shooting. They shot 13 of 26 from downtown. And, they had Grimes, 9 rebounds. Fabian White Jr., 11. Nate Hinton, 12 rebounds. So, brushing up on the Cougs. NFL gets back to work tonight. So, in the Crunch Exchange, I forgot what you asked me about the AFC South, but I think I need to change my answer. Did I say the Texans would win the South?
I asked, do you buy that the Texans will win tonight, win the South?
I think I take it all back. I want to give the opposite answer. I think the Colts are going to win tonight, and I think the Colts are going to win the South. Is it too late?
Yes, by almost 24 hours.
But the game hasn't been played.
But I asked you yesterday.
I understand. I could be wrong in the Crunch Exchange and right in life.
Yeah, but then you just take the I was right, and then if you're wrong.
How about if I bet on them? Does that count?
Well, then you're just being dumb, I think. You don't need to do that.
Why?
You don't need to curse yourself more by betting on air.
But I won last night. I broke the curse.
Talking about curses and breaking curses and jinxing and double jinxing.
I'll put it to the listeners. If you change your answer before the game, does it count? By the way, you know how sometimes you put on a pair of jeans or a jacket you haven't used in a while, found cash in it? So Monday night, I bet a three-team parlay. And I bet $40, and I lost. I had the over in the Kansas City Charger game, and I'm looking, I'm like, there's too much money in my account. I went back to my, finished wagers. I never hit submit. I never made the bet. So I saved myself $40. Of course, I'd have been pissed if I won, but because I didn't, I was like... And I went back, and it gives you a date range. And I'm like, okay, I know it was Monday Night Football. Nope, no wagers for September. What month are we in? November 18th. And I went back, and I was like, I guess I didn't hit submit. Because on my site, because it's actual money, you know, you hit the bet, and then it'll show you, okay, your $40 parlay is going to pay out for $211. And I went back, and then it says, hit again. It'll say your bet has, and I must have been doing it while we were on the air, got confused, and decided to change my, benefit from my own ineptitude. Is that an accurate way to portray this?
Yes.
So I did. Hey, $40 is $40. I'm not proud. My stupidity paid off. So for those of you who say it seems like a character flaw, ha! Ha! By the way, Mount Booble, go away. He's telling me it's too late. How could it be too late if I'm saying it? And now for spite, I'm betting on the Colts. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Hey, that deal where they upheld Myles Garrett, his season-long... Well, I guess it's not a season-long suspension. It's an indefinite suspension.
There's the difference.
So it was upheld on appeal today by the NFL. But now the story is, in his defense, trying to get games cut off, he told league officials that Mason Rudolph dropped an N-bomb on him. I mean, that's an accusation that you really need to take a three count before you levy, right? You know, it's not accusing a guy of kind of trying to kick you in the nards in a pile or some kind of a cheap shot. I mean, that's a character assassination. And a bad situation just got worse. Because if it's true, you know, Rudolph is scum. And if it's a lie, whew, really going to go down that path, huh? Yeah, that was a disturbing twist, to say the least. All right, let's make a move here. Lock up the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Get our view from the middle. He's the fine columnist for USA Today. You could usually catch him in the red section of the publication online, usatoday.com. On Twitter, you could use the handle at George Schroeder. Or you could have found him in today's Register Guard on the front page of the sports section. Either way, we welcome in George Schroeder. George, how are things? Let's try that one more time. I think we may have... perhaps he's en route back to Eugene. Let's take another run. George, have we officially made a connection here?
We have. Did you like my takeover of the Register Guard sports page?
Yeah, I was going to ask you, is there something you should be telling us? Have you called National Van Lines? Are you relocating back to Eugene?
No, that'd be cool if I was. But listen, somebody needed to call and tell me I was going to be on the front page of the Register Guard, as far as that goes. But it's kind of fun. We'll see how this merger goes between Gatehouse and Gannett. But, at least for the moment, it means I'm now back in the Register Guard family.
Nah, that was kind of awesome. It was a nice surprise. So you were at McLean Stadium. What a game. I mean, Baylor jumps Oklahoma, then the Sooners score the last 24. So after Alabama-LSU the other week, I asked you if, in fact, Joe Burrow was the Heisman front runner, and he had another fantastic game. But, George, if Jalen Hurts keeps performing like this, should we not dismiss his chance to get a big trophy?
No, I think we should dismiss his chance. I think it's Joe Burrow's. Okay. Not even to lose would not even be the way I'd say it. I think crazy, strange things would have to happen for him not to win the Heisman, and I think he deserves it. Quite frankly, I mean, you just look at his completion percentages, otherworldly, and it's not simply a dink and dunk and let your receivers go do the work offense. There is some of that, but there's a whole lot of passes over 20 yards involved in that, and he's completing a good percentage of those too. So I think he's been terrific. He's clearly the catalyst for an LSU team that is unbalanced. It's a little bit like some of these Oklahoma teams we've seen in the past in terms of the fact that they've got a great offense and their defense is not as good, but it might be good enough to win the whole thing. So I really think Joe Burrow is going to win the Heisman. Now, I think Hurts has got he's probably a shoe-in to go to New York at this point, unless crazy things happen, as a finalist. But I don't think, at this point, I couldn't tell you who could win it other than Joe Burrow.
All right. I believe you, but I just wanted to acknowledge Hurts because, you know, seeing him in person like you did, he just, and he made some mistakes. He turned it over a couple times in that game, but he's like the cornerback who gets burned and forgot about it, the closer in baseball who loses the night before then forgets about it. I mean, how much do you like just his demeanor in the clutch? He seems kind of unflappable.
Yeah, I like it a lot. Look, the guy's been in huge games before, right? Right from the get-go, as a true freshman, he was in huge games.
Right.
And done lots of things. And so unfazed is sort of his steady state, right? I think that's pretty fair to say.
I want to get to another great quarterback. Of course, Tua Tagovailoa is injured in that win at Mississippi State. You know, we get the usual, why was he still in there? Was Saban taking a risk? And it's like, it happened in the first half. So kind of a two-parter. Do you feel that the criticism was a little out of place? And how did the committee incorporate his injury this week?
Yeah, to the extent there was criticism, and there was some, I thought it was out of misplaced because, all right, there's two pieces to this. One, was he healthy enough to go, to play? And the answer to that was yes, according to Alabama, but also according to Tua Tagovailoa and the doctors, he was healthy enough to play. Let's recall that the week before, he threw for 418 yards, and he was not the real reason that they lost to LSU. He played pretty darn well. Not as good as Burrow, or as well as Burrow, but well. And so there's that. And then, you know, he was a little gimpy but he after the LSU game, but he was back and ready to go. It's a division rival. Now, Mississippi State's not very good, but it's not like Western Carolina, which is the FCS team they're playing this week. So he was ready to go. You play your starting quarterback. That's the first thing. The second thing is, once you're doing that, the conventional wisdom is essentially, regardless of the score, you play the guys till halftime. Ask any coach anywhere. A lot of guys are going to play him into the, you know, at least the first series of the third quarter, maybe longer, but certainly through the first half. So I thought people who were criticizing Nick Saban, you can't bubble wrap your stars. It's football is football, and it's a freak injury that was unrelated to the ankle injuries, unless you wanted to say he was not quite as fast as he would have been to get away from that pressure. But I don't know how you really quantify that.
Right.
The second piece is, you asked me about the playoff selection committee. They didn't factor Tua Tagovailoa's injury in at all in the rankings that came out Tuesday, and they shouldn't have, because you know they were already blowing out Mississippi State. They ended up blowing them out, so there was no reason to drop them. And they don't project what it's going to be like for a team after injuries. So I suspect that given the fact they're playing Western Carolina, that'll be an easy win, and you won't really see much of a drop-off because it's Western Carolina. So I don't think we'll see much of an impact this week either. But the Auburn game, that'll be interesting. Well, you know, obviously if they lose it, they're going to drop. But let's say they win, but it's pretty clear they're not the same offense. Let's say they beat Auburn, but it's pretty clear they're not the same offense. Then I think on the Tuesday, December 3rd rankings, which is the next to last set, I think you could see them get jumped by the number 6 teams and the number 7 team, you know, those kinds
right.
of teams. Oregon, Utah, the Oklahomas of the world, those guys could jump them at that point. You know, so but you don't project. You have to wait and see what they look like without it.
Speaking of the committee, as we continue with George Schroeder of USA Today, you wrote about the angle regarding Oregon Athletic Director Rob Mullen, the committee chair. We know the first two chairmen, Jeff Long of Virginia, Kirby Hokut of Texas Tech, their team wasn't in the mix. So is this just unique or a possible problem because he can't be part of the Oregon conversation? Obviously, something's a little different here.
Right. It's not just that he can't be part of the conversation slash discussion slash debate slash voting anytime Oregon is being compared with three teams, and that's how it works, or in a three-team bucket is how they do that. It's not just that. I mean, we've had guys go out of the room. The Oklahoma athletic director is going out of the room for the second or third year in a row, however many years he's been on it. Anytime Oklahoma's in discussion, Gene Smith, the Ohio State athletic director, was out of the room last year whenever that was happening. Frank Beamer, the former Virginia Tech coach, is recused from Oklahoma because his son's an assistant coach.
Right.
So, you know, last year you would have Beamer, the Oklahoma AD, and the Ohio State AD all out of the room at the same time during that. Is it Oklahoma? Is it Georgia? Is it Ohio State controversy or debate? So you had three of your 13 members out of the room. So we've seen that happen before, right? That it's not a big deal for Rob Mullins to be out of the room when when Oregon's being discussed. It's what's a little weird about it is that he's the selection committee chair and he's the designated spokesman for all of the committee members and for the committee, and he's either going to be tasked with talking about what happened when he wasn't in the room, and I know they can fill him in, right? But he wasn't there. He wasn't running them. It's weird that he's not running the meeting, by the way.
Right.
But he wasn't there. He didn't know how it all went down. Or in the case of Oregon, it really is probably not fair that he actually talk about Oregon versus Alabama versus Oklahoma. It's probably not fair that that doesn't look good in terms of optics to people. Now, Rob is doing a tremendous job as the spokesman and as the chairman, just like Jeff Long did and Kirby Hokut did before him. So, and look, he's got integrity. No one is suggesting that. I'm just saying it's a weird look. That's not a great look for them to have the selection committee chairman have a team in the mix. And by the way, if he did have a team in the mix, it's better to be 1, 2, or 3. It's that 4 and 5.
Right.
Deal. That's the most important decision that they make. Period. 4 versus 5.
Yeah.
Given the 4-team bracket, and so that's weird. And Bill Hancock, the executive director, will be the guy that will have to handle those questions and those answers. And it just is. It was unanticipated, as you noted. The Ducks weren't a factor when he became a committee member. The previous two chairmen didn't have teams. They were athletic directors whose teams were not factors. It's just a weird thing. And it's, you know what? It qualifies, and I wrote this, it qualifies as a really good problem to have if you're Rob Mullins. It's pretty cool to have your Ducks right there. but it just makes for a weird setup.
A couple final thoughts for George Schroeder of USA Today. So I play a game here called It's All About the Ducks. So our scenario is Ohio State, Clemson, and LSU win out. You've got three unbeaten conference champs. Oklahoma right. wins out to win the Big 12. Alabama wins the Iron Bowl. Utah and Oregon win all the way to the Pac-12 title game, and then the Ducks beat the Utes. At that point, how confident would you be if you were a diehard Oregon fan that they would get the fourth spot?
I think I'd be pretty confident, but not like incredibly confident. I think Oregon would get the nod. First of all, you can cast Alabama out before Tua Tagovailoa got hurt. Okay, they were not going to get the nod over a 12-1 Pac-12 champion or a 12-1 Big 12 champion. It's just not going to happen. They don't have the resume this year. They haven't. Their only top 25 win by the time the season's over in that scenario would be one over an 8-4 Auburn in your scenario.
Right.
Texas A&M is currently a top 25 win, but Texas A&M's last two games are Georgia and LSU. So they're going to end up with 5 losses, or else this whole thing's going to get blown up, right? But in our scenario, Texas A&M has at least four or five losses, because they would have lost to LSU anyway, probably Georgia too. So they're going to have Alabama has one top 25 win in that case. Their best next best claim to getting in is, well, we only got beat by 5 by the number one team in. By the way, it was at home and they controlled the other team controlled the game, but that's a great quality loss. The committee doesn't care about that. So cast Alabama out of this conversation. That was not going to happen before Tua got hurt. And Alabama fans don't want to hear that. That's just the way it is. They're done unless there's a 2-loss conference champion. And by the way, with Tua hurt, I'm not completely sure they get in then. Now, so that takes it down to, in your scenario, Oregon versus Oklahoma.
Yep.
And there's a whole lot of moving parts there. Some of it's going to be what you look like. Some of it's going to be the fact that what you described in the Pac-12 championship game is a top 10 matchup in that case. Some of it's going to be how high does Baylor win out? Is that the team Oklahoma plays? And if they do win out, did they kind of, you know, they only dropped to 14th. Is it possible that they move up to 10th by then? I don't know, but think about some of the teams that are going to lose. Penn State would lose in your scenario this week.
Georgia.
Minnesota quite possibly would lose. There's at least a shot that both of those conference championship games would be top 10 matchups or something close.
Right.
And then the only other piece of this I would say is this. What Oregon and Utah have between now and the meeting that they'll have with each other is no top. They don't get any real quality wins for beating, you know, for example, Arizona State and Oregon State, even though I think Oregon State could be a problem. You're not going to get a lot of love from the committee for beating those teams. The one thing Oklahoma has going for it is Baylor was a top 25 win. Oklahoma State probably will be a top 25 win, and then Baylor again would be one if they did that. Here's what I think. The committee clearly, at this point, likes both Pac-12 teams better than it likes Oklahoma. That's a big deal for the Ducks. That's really good for the Ducks. But you need to look good doing what you're doing.
Right.
And that would go, whether you're an Oklahoma fan, an Oregon fan, or a Utah fan, you need to look good doing what you're doing down the stretch. It's not going to be enough to win.
And finally, you'll be at an interesting game in Columbus. That appeared to be a big showdown a couple weeks ago. Penn State, Ohio State. Buckeyes can continue this march, while a Penn State win would obviously mean a lot of turmoil. The odds makers don't see this very close. Penn State barely escaped Indiana last week, and I know they're better. How much of a chance do you give the Nittany Lions in this one?
You know, at the risk of having to come back on, you know, next week and say I was dead wrong, I don't give them much of a chance. Look, Penn State has a nice resume. It really does, despite the loss to Minnesota, and that's actually a quality loss, obviously. When you look, and by the way, Ohio State doesn't have that resume yet, but by the end of the year, it might have the best resume of anybody. But I think Ohio State might just be the best team in the country. They just don't have the same resume as LSU. LSU is the correct number one team in terms of rankings, but Ohio State may be the better team. I haven't seen the real flaw in that team yet. You know, we were talking about LSU's defense, for example. Everybody, I can pick apart all of these contenders, but I'm not sure where I'd start picking on Ohio State right now at this point. And so, I really like Ohio State's chances.
Yeah, and they could end up with three straight top 20 wins to finish the season. So
exactly. Exactly. That's the thing. Which at that point would it at least come close to matching sort of the LSU resume, and then you start looking at the eye test again and you go, well, hey, it may well be that the committee thinks Ohio State's a better team because, you know, here's what's funny. I think the narrative, the committee sometimes a couple weeks behind perception, which is odd because they do watch a lot of football, but it's pretty clear if you've been paying attention that LSU's defense is a problem.
Yep.
And I don't mean that it's a problem against most teams, but I do mean it's a problem. It's going to be a problem against really good competition, meaning the kinds of teams you would face in a playoff or maybe a Georgia even in the SEC title game. Those kinds of teams, it's a problem against, whether it's Oregon or Utah or Oklahoma, or whether as the 1-4, right? Or whether it's Ohio State or Clemson. All of those teams might well light that defense up. And some of those teams have better defenses that can at least attempt to sort of slow down LSU's offense. So I've been telling people this, Steve, and you can tell me what you think about this. LSU is not Oklahoma 2018. Historically good offense, historically bad defense. But it's Oklahoma 2017. Historically good offense, below average defense. And if you think about that particular team, it got dinged a lot for its defense, and then last year you're like, well, that was actually pretty good defense compared to what they got now. If you think about that team, it was good enough to win a national title, but it couldn't quite get past Georgia.
No,
what's LSU about to get into?
Yeah, I was looking at
situation against Georgia.
Yeah, I was looking at LSU. It's a rarity. They've won three games where they've given up at least 37 points. So.
No, it's crazy. I mean, they gave up. They turned Vanderbilt into an offensive juggernaut. They turned when week two I was in Austin, and it was a great win for LSU, and it was a back and forth Big 12 shootout. Everybody's going, wow, they came into the Big 12 country and they won a Big 12 shootout. Well, it was great. It was tremendous entertaining. Here's the problem. Texas is not a Big 12 shootout team, but they turned them into one. That Texas offense doesn't score like that on anybody, but they did that day. I mean, it's not like they played Texas Tech or somebody who can just zing it up and down the field.
Right.
And by the way, you know, or you know, Oklahoma or Oklahoma State or one of those teams you traditionally think of like that. They play Texas, and it's a team that really doesn't score a ton of points. But they did that night.
Yep, they. It makes for just more intrigue, folks. He is George Schroeder of USA Today. Or if you get the Register Guard, he's in today's sports section on
Crazy.
Twitter. It's at George Schroeder. Enjoy the horseshoe, George, and obviously, tick, 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 another big conversation next week.
Looking forward to it.
Take it easy, George. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Yeah, Texas has not exactly emerged as a lights-out offense, despite Ellinger throwing for more than 400 in that game. I mean, this is a Texas team that just lost at Iowa State, scored 21 points. Kansas State, they scored 27. TCU, 27. Yeah, they have not been what you would call a typical lighted-up air raid Big 12 team. All right, break time is upon us. We'll do that. We'll come back with an update and more sports talk, even though it's crunch time. My bad. 95.3 The Score.
We're riding the waves of technology just for you. You can call the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline at 284-8571. Text 321-0824. Tweet Steve at SportsTalk953.
Hearing left off of Powell. Pull up three. Hits! 14-point quarter for Doncic. And from just below the hash mark for three. Hits again! Chased by Bowman. Steps back. Will shoot the three. Hit it again!
He's on a roll with that three-point shot.
Crossing over, stepping back, over Robinson for three. I dare say Brady's in the zone.
By the way, his last name is correctly pronounced Doncic. How is he not the godfather? That's what I mean. How's that not his nickname? What the hell is wrong with you people? By the way, so 35 points, 11 assists, and 10 rebounds. That's a good full game for an NBA player, right? How about a half game? NBA game, 48 minutes, duh. He played 25 minutes. He cranked out 35, 11, and 10. That's Chuck Cooperstein, by the way, on the Dallas Maverick radio network. How about are the Warriors? They give up a WMP, very many points. I mean, that game was like, okay, so we don't have to watch this. Then they got into the late game. What a game that was. Tell you what, that was probably the best game of the year so far in the NBA. The Celtics and the Lock Clippers. That went to the Warriors. Anyway, Doncic, what have you done for me today? I scored 35 points, you got 11 rebounds, you got 10 assists, the triple-double. You've done well, my friend. 3210824, that is the text line. You could tweet at us at 953 The Score for the station, at Sports Talk 953 for me, for Nick, it's at Rick Nodges. By the way, tomorrow morning is when we roll out our sweet deal of the week, and it's an awesome one. Because it was awesome. Go to 95.3thescore.com, 9 a.m. on the morrow. Sweet deal of the week. $25 gets you $50 to spend at Cornucopia. Now a third location. Of course, the legendary locale, 17th Street down, I always want to say downtown. It's not really downtown. It's more in the fairground area. Fifth Ave. Okay, that's downtown. And how about the new one, 521 Main Street in Springfield? So you got the two locations in Eugene, the brand new locale in Springfield. Check it out. Sweet deal of the week, Cornucopia. $25 gets you $50 to spend. And it goes on sale on the morrow. Varsity Blues! Mellow Phase 2 tonight, the front end of the TNT game. They're playing Knicks' favorite team, Das Buchs, with Giannis. So what do you guys think about what Barkley said? So he basically said to a woman, I don't hit woman. If I did, I'd hit you. Something along those lines. Just, I mean, it was really, 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 really to infinity. Stupid. So, and by the way, this is, I like Barkley. This is not the first time he's got his size 16 stuck in his mouth. So Alexi McCammond said, she went on Twitter and said, for your information, Charles Barkley tonight said, I don't hit women, but if I did, I'd hit you. And then, of course, what happens? Well, it was a joke. Well, no, that's not a joke. That's not funny. I have pretty decent sense of humor. And he said, told her he couldn't take a joke. And, of course, it went viral. And let's see. Barkley, that was it. All right, I'm happy I found the right piece. Because one time this moron said, it's a game. If you lose, you go home and you beat your wife and kids. Did you see my wife jumping up and down at the end of the game? That's because she knew I wasn't going to beat her. That's his playing days. He's now 56 years old. And a lot of people called him out because there was also a commentary on officials, 1997, because now all of a sudden everybody's going back and calling out all his misogynistic crap from the previous eras. He was talking about female refs. I just hope they don't have women officials. It's the principle of the thing. I wouldn't want a man doing a WNBA game. And your answer is, why? It's a referee. I'm really a lot more concerned about quality, especially with some of the ding-dongs we have. So, and then, of course, you have the bottom line for some people is, oh, he apologized. That makes it all right. Yeah, I've said this before. I'm not a big fan of grown-up apologies. Because the bottom line is, if you're of a certain age and been around a while and you do something like that, you mostly fall into the, I'm sorry. And then there's the unwritten, I got caught, or I have to put up with this crap, or I have to apologize to you. I really meant it. All right, to the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline we go, bring in Cody. Cody, good afternoon. How's it going?
Oh, pretty good, Steve. I don't want to get sidetracked too much with the misogynistic comment, but it kind of brought me to a weird place. Thinking about the Blazers a little bit in the last couple of games, you know, and let's not forget that Barkley's going on the record saying that he doesn't want to be a role model.
So, yeah, he did say
that.
That
absolves the guy completely, right? No. Anyway, a couple of games ago, there was a new female referee, and, you know, I couldn't help but think it was a couple years before that was the first one. And she got a lot more looked and a little bit more ribby, I think, initially, and probably gets a little more camera time just because of that unique angle. But it didn't seem like that was the case. And maybe that's because guys like Lillard, every time they, you know, go for the basket down low and, you know, take a hit or look like they take a hit, they stand up and glare at that ref. But, you know.
Yeah, I think
that's a little bit of what Barkley's comment, you know, comes from. A little bit.
Yeah. You know, you can't say anything like that.
Well,
it's a jackass comment.
You know, you wouldn't want women calling the game.
Yeah, I just lost you. I didn't hear what the hell he just said. I'll tell you what, I think her name was Violet Palmer, the first female referee to officiate an NBA game. We're going back about 2 years now. I don't recall yet watching a game, and I've noticed some female officials. It's just, I have not heard commentary. I have not heard league analysts. I think the proof is in the pudding. There are women refereeing NBA games, and I don't even notice it. Best referees, best officials, best umpire in the world is the one you're like, who are the umps? Who are, I don't know. Good. You know, we don't need Cowboy Joe. We don't need the grandstanders. We don't need Tim Donaghy fixing games. Just call the action. If you blow your whistle, explain the infraction. If you need help, go to your head ref. If you need further assistance and it's eligible for it, go to the video replay system. Otherwise, you know, with officials in football and basketball in particular, you know, as long as you could properly make your way to where you're supposed to be on the field or court, I'm trying to think, who was the ref that every Blazer fan hated during the Jailblazer years and right after that? Was it Javi, I think it was. And I mean, this is before social media, and I've watched, obviously, being here, doing this, being a fan, loving the NBA as much as anything, watched a lot of games, and there were an element of Duck fans who were wired into certain then Pac-10 officials, and I had a buddy, Kenny, who now moved back east. He would sit. He had really good seats to the game. So picture old Mac Court, the second level front row. So, and the refs used to come out of the tunnel right below him. He knew them all. And if he and in his mind, they were all evaluated based on how they called Oregon games. And he would get on the refs before the tip-off. I'd hear him because my buddy had tickets right in front of him. And I went to a lot of those games. And, you know, hey, Ref X, none of that crap from UCLA last March. And I look back, I'd be like, dude, how do you... He was obsessed with the officiating. And some of the Blazer fans would... I'd get to a place and it's like, what's the matter? Oh, so-and-so's ref in the game. I was like, God, you guys really actually believe the officials have it in for you? Well, I'd be like, just get a vodka. All right, 284-8571.
They always do.
Yeah, if you ever read Joe Buck's Twitter profile, it says something about, yeah, I hate your team the most.
It's true. Joe Buck is the worst. He hates the Giants.
You guys are when it comes to broadcasters and who was it the week before last? These Fox guys don't like the Ducks. They don't care.
Well, that was Brock Huard. That's a different thing.
And I was listening to the game too. It's a figment of crybabies' imaginations. All right, we really need to take a break so we can get back, and because I know Nick has put in some yeoman's work. So we'll take a break. We'll be back. We'll wrap up Crunch Time with the lightning round. It is a Thursday, right? Coming next, 95.3 The Score.
Today's show is brought to you by the Coors Light Frost Brewed Sports Desk. Coors Light is the official sponsor of your Oregon Ducks and the Coors Light Refreshing Tweet of the Day. Tweet Steve at SportsTalk953 for your chance to get involved. Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
The rule is unfair, but the application of the rule is fair. If the NCAA didn't do this, if they didn't give Wiseman the 9 games, which is 30% of the season, and stuff that we talked about well before this ruling was ever handed down, they would have been criticized like crazy by others who got the same punishment in the past. So this is normal process for how these extra benefit cases go and eligibility cases.
Jay Bilas. VSPN talking about the Wiseman case, which I now officially put onto the back burner because he's gone. Oregon doesn't play him. They beat him with him. It's a good win. Who cares? Bye. All right, welcome back to the Thursday edition of Crunch Time on 95.3 The Score. Since it is the final segment, since it is a Thursday, let's try a little something we call the lightning round.
You'll have to excuse my friend. He's a little slow.
Luckily, I have prepared for such an event. The lightning round!
It's the final November Thursday lightning round. Why? Well, Thanksgiving should be coming round, and tonight, the Texans are going down. I changed my mind. The lightning round.
Not allowed to change your mind. It's not a thing you can do. You are locked into the Texans are winning.
I will be bad.
You're a liar and
I
a
like
fraud and
calls.
A cheat. You are a cheat, Steve.
Jacques!
Some big oofs, and then there's the big oof that is the Golden State Warriors this year. Everyone expected a drop-off with the departure of Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson tore his ACL in the playoffs, and that was going to drop you down a couple of wins. Then Steph Curry broke his hand. He's going to be out for at least 3 months, if not longer. And honestly, waiting it out and waiting for longer might be the best course for Golden State, since their starting five last night was Willie Cauley-Stein and seven dudes from the G League. They lost by 48, and Luka Doncic probably could have had a triple-double by the end of the first quarter if he was really trying. The Warriors, for all their winning and success they've had over the last 5 years, would actually be in the running for the number one pick in the lottery. They're worse than the Cavaliers, Pistons, Hawks, and yes, even the Knicks. The eternally bad, forever taking New York Knicks have one more win than the Golden State Warriors, and no, this isn't 2007 all over again. The Warriors, at the very least, have that hope that when Steph comes back, the wins will come, and then in 2020, your OG Big Three will all be back. They'll be healthy. They'll probably have a really good pick, and the Knicks, well, the Knicks are toast. I mean, there is that small chance they end this year with more wins than a Steph Curry-led Warriors team with the world's biggest asterisk next to that statement. But it could be the only title the Knicks win for quite some time. Who ends the season with more wins, the Knicks or the Warriors?
Whoa. So it's definitely the Knicks, or it's not Cleveland, Atlanta, or of the other crap teams.
I'm not talking about the bad. These two teams, who gets more wins?
I think Golden State is going to go full on tank mode, and I don't think Curry's coming back. And the West is better than the East, if you ask me, so I'm going the Bricks.
Wow.
But it's going to be like 16 to 15.
Homer. Just a homer play. Benjamin David Simmons, the Wizard of Oz, the Thunder from Down Under. He's now the Splash Brothers' Australian cousin. After 2 years and 11 games in the NBA, playing more than 5,800 minutes and 17 tries, Ben hit the big one, his first career three. From Atlanta to Chicago, Minnesota to L.A., Toronto to San Antonio, Ben Simmons has been trying to hit that three-point shot, and last night he didn't. He became the 328th different player in the NBA to have made a three-pointer since he started his rookie/sophomore season in 2017. But now that the made three-pointer door has been broken down, are the floodgates coming? Is Ben going to explode the rest of the season and just keep shooting threes? There's got to be some confidence that comes from seeing that first shot go in. There's got to be more on the way. But he made his first three on his first attempt in the first quarter last night and then didn't try any others. Ben Simmons will make over, under 2.5 more three-pointers.
The rest of the year?
The rest of the year.
He's one of one. They've got to try it. I'm gonna say he makes more than 10.
Whoa!
So I'm going way over.
Way, way over. Okay, then. Last one. Rob Manfred has quite the situation on his hands. The Houston Astros, allegedly, because even with the mountain of evidence that's come out in the last couple of weeks, you still have to say it's alleged. Use of a camera in center field feeding a live feeding to the dugout so that the team used a series of bangs, whoops, and bonks communicated the signs to the batter. Today, Manfred said, quote, "We're going to investigate the Astros situation as thoroughly as humanly possible. It will encompass not only what we know about 2017, but 18 and 19. We're talking to people all over the industry. Manfred's looking for a snitch. At first, it was feared anybody with knowledge of what was going on wouldn't talk about it for fear of never getting a job in baseball again. But when Don Robb is coming, I think he's going to make some people sing. But then there's the question, what's the punishment going to be? Obviously, a big, 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 big fine. But what else? Was there cheating in the World Series? I mean, if you're going to put that much effort into sealing Steins in March, you're probably going to use it in October, right? Can Manfred really become commissioner title stripper? The proper punishment for the Astros is blank.
Well, first we need the crime and a conviction. I don't believe in the vacating of a championship. That's ridiculous. And Manfred should learn from Selig that you can't play ostrich and bury your head in the sand. So I guess the best way to put it is the loss of jobs or ban from baseball for those who are involved.
The ban hammer. I lied about that one being the last one. This is the last one. The NFL MVP talks are starting to go stronger and stronger as we get to the closer to the end of football season. And looking back on the discussion of the first 3 months of the season are pretty funny. At first, it was Christian McCaffrey, who was running like he was literally on fire, playing every single snap week in and week out for the Panthers. Dalvin Cook then had a couple big weeks, took the attention away from McCaffrey, followed by Russell Wilson, who keeps winning in close games and confusing us with his Houdini routine. And now it's all about Lamar Jackson and his running and throwing combination like we've never seen before. Wilson and Jackson have both very credible claims to the MVP crown. Wilson has thrown for a couple hundred more yards, less interceptions, but when you look at per attempt, the numbers are about the same, but Lamar clearly running away with the rushing numbers, and that's why he's got the big lead on the MVP crown. So who wins it? The NFL MVP will be Wilson, Jackson, Mr. Run CMC, or other.
Well, it's a three-horse race, mainly two, with Lamar Jackson and Russell Wilson. I'm not going to completely eliminate Pat Mahomes. I mean, what if he gets hot the way he finishes?
He missed like 3 weeks.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying, I'm not willing to dismiss him because what if somebody else gets hurt? But as it stands right now, You know, I got to tell you, I don't know how to separate Jackson and Wilson right now. So right now I would say I would give out co-MVPs.
Oh, pick a side! Pick a side!
So the Steelers, Cincinnati, no. Cleveland, no. Lamar's going to run roughshod over them. I have a feeling Jackson ends up winning it, and I don't even know if I agree. All right. Did we just go Crunch Exchange?
You just bought it.
I would have preferred pending. To tell you the honest to God truth there, but I guess se n'est pas une option. Looking ahead to the 4 o'clock, 4:30, Aaron J. Fentress. I've got two for talking trash that I'm going to be more presenting a case to all of you, and I'm going to need some input. Either way, the 4 o'clock hour, Sports Talk is next, 95.3, The Score.
This is stupid!